welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 87, recorded November 7th, 2011.
Cool. Lots of sevens and even an 11.
Yeah, okay. We could go get a slushie. Or a Slurpee. It's a Slurpee. Okay, we have a voice message from Mick in Carnforth. And then we have an update from Randall on the tiger barb's aggression situation. And we also have an email from Mick about some frog issues. And then we have a few things of our own to talk to you about.
Yes.
So we're going to jump right in and get started with the Google Voice message from Mick. Here you go.
Hi, Russ and Kelly. This is Mick from Carnforth in the UK. Just ringing about brackish water, a couple of points that I've come up against. I've actually discovered that one of the cheapest ways to get salt to condition the water is to use a regular supermarket dishwasher salt. Check the back of the packet. It has no other ingredients. It's just pure salt. It is much coarser than aquarium salt, which is very, very fine. So I tend to find that I have to kind of let that down with some boiling water in a bucket and then add water to that to then go in the aquarium, because it takes a little bit longer to dissolve, whereas aquarium salt, I'm more or less just putting off a teaspoon straight into the tank and it will dissolve in the tank water. But it's worked really well. I've used it for hatching brine shrimp. I've used it for adding salt to some of the live bearers. I recently used it when I got my new sailfin mollies to add salinity to the water. And the other really useful thing that I got when I was keeping some mangrove crabs and some gobies was to get a hydrometer and look at the different brackish fish and actually match the brackish fish to the salinity of the water, because not all brackish fish want exactly the same amount of salt in the water. So when I was mixing fish together, I used to check that they would be okay with the specific gravity, add the salt to a solution, and then measure that with a hydrometer and build that up and move that down in the aquarium water. So I hope that's some useful information about adding salt to the water, and I look forward to listening to this week's show. Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, that was cool. Thank you, Mick. We hadn't heard from anyone overseas for a while on our message machine, and it's always fun to hear someone from the UK. Well, I like your ideas, of course. That's the most important thing, you know. Using the dishwashing salt, you know, we looked it up because we had never heard of dishwashing salt before. And I thought, is that anything like ice cream salt? Is it anything the same? And it's not, apparently. It's quite a bit purer and finer, but still coarse.
Well, from what we found.
But from what we found, apparently it's supposed to be a finer sort of salt.
Didn't find much.
Didn't find a whole lot, but a bit. And it looks very interesting. That's a good idea. You can use that. It's very pure, apparently, so it's a good way to make sure you're just putting salt in. And it sounds like it's working well for you.
So it's probably cheaper than aquarium salt, I would imagine.
Well, I'm sure it's cheaper
what would be the point?
Than a synthetic seawater mix. I'm sure it's much cheaper than that. There are several types of salt, really, that you can put in aquaria. There's the sea salt mix.
What do we have? Or what did we use when we had
We have marine mix, the one I use for making our brackish water, just because I have a whole bunch of it. I got a bunch free.
Yay so, for free cycle!
Yes. So, you can get synthetic sea salt mix, which is made specifically to replicate chemically the balance that's in the ocean.
But what brand did we have?
Instant Ocean, mostly.
Oh, that's
I've
right.
used
that's
a couple of different
okay.
ones. But then they have reef salt, which is the same thing, but with certain minerals added, because those minerals are depleted quickly in systems where you have, like, stony corals that absorb a lot of minerals from the system quickly. So it's basically boosted, you know, sea salt with additional minerals. And then you can get aquarium salt, which is usually for freshwater aquariums, but it doesn't have some of
these brackish...
Right.
Kinds of things.
Right, to do brackish things or to hatch brine shrimp or to use medicinally for freshwater fish or different things like that or that sort of thing. That kind of salt is not the same stuff you get, you know, it doesn't have iodized. It's not iodized and it doesn't have things to prevent it from caking like sodium silicate or whatever.
Like
you get in
salt
table
does.
Salt. And then finally there's like what Mick is using, this dishwashing salt, which is new to me. So that, thank you for sharing that with us. That's cool that you found something that works well for brackish applications.
I'm wondering who else knows about dishwashing salt. Like, I don't know, maybe people, just leave us a note on the Facebook, and if you're a dishwashing salt user, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if it's more common in the UK, since I've never heard of it
right
over here, or if there are other systems of dishwashers that, I don't know, back east or something. People,
right.
You know, well, I'm just curious, so.
When we looked it up, we found that people in the US are buying it, like on Amazon.com and so on, but they're buying it from overseas. So.
But it seemed to be a different kind, because Mick said his was coarse,
right?
And this stuff on Amazon was,
well,
said it was fine.
But what I think what the idea is, it's fine in the same sort of way that the pellets of water softener salt are fine, that they have fine granules, that they're in pellets, or they're made into little cakes or pellets, whereas rock salt is coarse.
Crystalline, rock salt, like the stuff that you make ice cream
level
with.
Yeah, it's coarse.
Okay.
You have these large crystals of it. Right?
Okay.
So I think that's how that works. Anyway, that was a good thing to hear. Yeah, I just learned something new about how that works, so that's cool.
Thank you, Mick. What do we have next? Oh, we have a follow-up from Randall. We talked about his tiger barbs last time. They were nipping at the silver dollars. Or we were hypothesizing that that is what was happening.
Yes. Well, he confirmed that that is indeed what was happening,
okay,
because upon viewing the fish's interactions further, he did see that the tiger barbs were nipping at the silver dollars. And so he said that they had added two more tiger barbs to the tank, so they have five now, and they the tiger barbs, pay less attention to the silver dollars, and they seem to entertain each other instead. So,
okay, so your idea worked.
Yep, sounds like we were
great,
all on the right track. And this is an interesting thing that he mentioned. A couple of other interesting things. He said that it would be a good idea if we would release a podcast just for those who are getting started on aquariums, like the very basics.
Basics 101, how to set up your first aquarium.
Right,
kind of
that
thing.
Kind of thing. And he also mentioned, so I think we should do that sometime.
Okay.
Just
we can do that.
Yeah, like the bare bones, what you need to know if you're getting started out, or the top ten things we wish we would have known when we started out
there
so many years ago, whatever, something like that. And he also mentioned that he and his wife tried feeding some peas based on our last episode that we talked about, the top ten human food for fish that Andreka in Oregon requested. He said that they were intrigued by that, and they tried it out. They put two or three peas that they, you know, squished out of the skins into the tank, and the silver dollars ate two or so of them, and then one more that the tiger barbs nibbled on. So,
oh, good.
It worked well. And he did say he noticed that there was a bit of cloudiness from the peas, you know, around the peas, surrounding the peas, just a little cloud of something in the water.
Pea. I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
That's just the tiredness talking.
Yes, and that is a good point. And you shouldn't overfeed with vegetables, because partly from that and partly for other reasons, but you shouldn't overfeed with anything. But particulate matter from the peas can provide food for bacteria. You know, one reason why I don't like to feed sweet potato slices?
Tell me.
It's for that very reason.
They pee?
No. It's because they... You're going to make me laugh.
I'm okay. Sorry. I'll stop. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. They feed... You can feed slices of sweet potato to your fish and so on.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's probably from the high sugar content and so on.
Is it cloudy?
As the fish nibble on it, especially if you have plecos or something nibbling on it, fine particles are released and sugars are released, and you can get a bacterial bloom.
Well, that's no fun at all.
So that can happen with various vegetables. You have to be careful not to overfeed, but two or three peas, like Randall did, that's fine. That's not going to be a problem. But in a 25-gallon tank, you know, that's not
right.
an issue. But too many peas could
I'm
be a problem.
I'm glad the fish enjoyed it, though.
Right. And I'm glad people are trying it out.
Yay!
So that was a good idea, Andreka. Thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, next we're going to go back to Mick again. He has an email this time about African clawed frogs being dyed, like D-Y-E-D, like with color?
Yes, being colored. I'll have to show you the video that
they're
he
like
sent
punk
in the link.
Frogs?
Yes. Yes. He said he's got this link from an article in the UK magazine Practical Fish Keeping, which we referenced before. It's a good magazine. It's got some nice stuff in it. And basically the idea, I went to the link and looked at it, and they may be offering for them for sale in the UK. It's something that's popular, I guess, in China already, to take African clawed frogs and dye them. I'm not sure which sorts of chemicals they use, but they come up looking like they have
what kind
pastel
of colors?
Pink and yellow and stuff.
This is my question.
Okay.
Because these frogs are on the darker spectrum of color.
Yes.
How do you get it to be a light color like pastel pink? Are they bleaching them?
They start out with albinos.
Oh.
And then they are dying albino.
So all
frogs.
The dyed ones are from albinos or just the light colored ones?
Well, from what I could tell from the video, it looks like they were all starting with albino frogs. Because they're all pastel colors, but they have like purple and neon green kind of, you know.
So what, they want to put them in Easter eggs?
Well, apparently in China they're popular with kids. And some of them are ending up in other countries. I saw a linked video to it or somehow. Because there's a YouTube video associated with the article.
Uh-huh.
And there was another one that someone in the U.S. had accidentally been shipped some. A pet store had accidentally been shipped some with a shipment of normal ones. And so
what
there were several of those.
What did they do with them? Did they sell them or did they...
I don't know if they sold them or not, but somebody who was friends with the pet store owner took a video of them and posted it on YouTube. So some of them have ended up in the U.S. at least, a few. I think that was the U.S., that video.
I don't know. I don't even like those fish. What were they called?
Which ones?
Genetically engineered fish with those funky
the
colors
glowfish?
That looked like they'd been colored in with a highlighter pen.
Glowfish, right? The zebra danios?
Yeah, I don't like those.
And those were genetically engineered, and that's one thing.
I don't even like that.
I know. And there are lots of reasons why genetically modifying fish could be a problem if you're doing it that way, transgenically. I mean, selective breeding is genetic modification too, but it's not the same as transgenics.
It's within their already genetic realm of possibility.
Right, it's not taking a chunk of someone else's genome and sticking it in.
Right.
Yeah, it's different.
Keep your genome to yourself, thank you very much.
Exactly. But, well, you know, Mick thinks it's appalling too. He mentioned that. And it's a terrible thing for the poor frogs. And he knows that he mentioned that his fish club's constitution prevents dyed fish from being sold at auctions.
Good for them.
Which I think is a good move, you know.
Yeah.
Avoid that. And he also said it would be great if more energy were spent in encouraging people to look after these critters properly and breed them in captivity.
Right.
And he says he knows lots of people get these in shops there in the UK as they're labeled as community. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yeah.
Community with what?
Exactly.
Like a pelican?
Community
they might
with
not
each
be
other.
Able to fit a pelican in them. Of course, the pelican would eat the frogs. So.
Yeah, probably true. And he said there must be hundreds that either starve to death or just get outcompeted in community aquariums by well-meaning aquarists who are given poor information by shops. Now, there are really two things I'd like to mention. Well, one, of course, dyeing, tattooing, fish, frogs, whatever, not right, as we mentioned.
Up.
The chemicals could be dangerous for them, you know, besides the fact that it's just not natural and I don't think it looks very good. I think
they're
chemicals could be bad.
They're beautiful frogs in their own right. People don't need to, you know, give them a haircut.
I know. It makes them more of a novelty than a pet, you know?
Yeah.
It's just sort of cheap, I think. It cheapens them a little bit. And it's also true that the most commonly kept aquatic frogs are not good community inhabitants. I mean, Xenopus, the African clawed frog, the larger ones, will eat anything they can fit in their mouths, and they'll have a go at eating whatever they can't fit in their mouths. They'll try. Like ours that tries to eat our cat.
Have we told that story?
I don't know.
Have we talked about that?
If we have or not.
Well, maybe we can tell them about the love-hate relationship between our cat and our frog after the break.
Okay.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Well, anyway, to just prove the point that African clawed frogs are not good community residents, they will try to eat just about anything. And our cat has been known to leap on top of our...
He's quite a frisky boy,
yes.
Our cat. He loves to chase things. He routinely goes out and catches bugs and mice and baby birds, I'm sorry to say.
Unfortunately, yeah.
You know, he'll chase any our feet,
yeah.
Anything that moves. So his frog darting around in the tank is very interesting to him.
So once in a while, he'll jump up on top of there and paw the side of the aquarium, and then our frog, Hiro, just attacks with a vengeance up against the glass. He tries to grab the paw of our
cat. Think, oh, I should try to get away from this predator. He just thinks,
ooh, food.
And he's trying to shove the paw in his mouth through the glass, you know. It's the kids think it's hilarious.
Right. So
I think it's hilarious.
It's kind of funny. It doesn't seem to worry either one of them, but we do try to keep the cat off the fish tank, but once in a while it happens.
But he'll do it from down below too.
That's true too. So the basic idea is they will eat just about anything. And so they don't make good community inhabitants. Mm-hmm. There are a few larger fish that might survive with the frogs, but then
you might
get some aggression around the fish's part in the frogs, so that's not good. And then if you have the smaller species, like the Hymenochirus species, the African dwarf frogs, they are really not community inhabitants because they can't compete with the fish for food. Now, they're just not very good at seeing food fast. You know, fish will dart up to the top and surge and grab it. And these frogs, you need to make special provisions to make sure they eat if they're with fish. And so you can do it, but it's, you know, you have to make those special provisions. And a lot of people who go and buy them at the pet store for the first time don't know that they need to do something like that. And so they have problems. And personally, I just like to keep them by themselves.
Thing to just have by themselves, just
right.
To watch them by
right.
themselves.
Yes. And, okay, I think that's about it with that. Now, in the article, I'm not sure which species, I don't recall actually, whether it was Xenopus or Hymenochirus species that were being died in the UK, but I did notice that the ones in the video from China, those were definitely Xenopus, the African...
The bigger ones.
Clawed frogs, yeah.
Okay.
So either one is still a problem. So,
yeah.
Okay. Now, Mick also was glad we sent him the link to our Amphipods podcast, and I think we mentioned that in the last show, and said that was helpful. It is.
Ones?
I think it was like episode 9 or something. It's a long time ago. But he said it was useful.
Oh, good.
And he's going to send us a picture of the small setup that he's got going in the next day or so. Just to recap something we talked about last week with that, our 5-year-old daughter and I recently were looking at our 10-gallon aquarium and taking stock of what was going on in there. There used to be an amphipod problem, which we mentioned in the last podcast, in that tank, and we put in a honey gourami to deal with it. So the livestock includes now one honey gourami, small school of about a dozen celestial pearl danios, some small juvenile ancestress that I took out of our 55, just a few small ones there, and about 30, perhaps more, red cherry shrimp. And looking all over the tank, the plants are doing fine. We've got Java fern in there, and some dwarf water lettuce, and some fairy fern, and a little duckweed. And we looked in there, and there is one lone amphipod in a corner that we could identify.
Oh.
I'm sure there are more than that in the tank, but because there always are.
Is he wearing the cone of shame?
No, it was just sitting in a corner eating a bit of pumpkin or something that I had put in there for the fish and the shrimp.
He wasn't wearing a little, like, amphipod dunce cap or...
No.
Over there in the corner all by his lonesome.
The gourami couldn't see him over in the corner, but I'm sure... It was gratifying to see that the gourami was doing a good job and that, you know, the shrimp population, I'm sure, is well under what it would be if we didn't have the gourami in there, but... You got to do
so
what you
got to do. So is the amphipod population.
Because either the plants were getting completely munched by the amphipods, or we put him in, and,
right.
or some other fish that would eat them. So that's.
But like you said, I'm sure there's still enough lurking.
Yeah.
That he still gets to eat them.
He still gets snacks once in a while because we saw one in there. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's about it for that. I think. Thank you, Mick, and we're glad that was helpful. And.
Yeah.
And thank you for helping spread the word on not dying aquatic creatures.
Amen.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about this funny try-op situation.
Oh, yes, because try-ops, as we've talked about before, are picky about what they hatch in.
Indeed. Usually, anyway.
Yes.
Most of the time, you don't get very good results unless you hatch try-ops in very low mineral content water, such as distilled or RO water, something like that. And I have had a tank of try-ops that's been going for a good long while now.
Since August?
Yes, since August. Without a whole lot of water going in or out of the system, you know, I'd been topping it off.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the strange thing. Was that after one of the generations, after the adults, this generation had died, just a day or two after that, I saw little babies zipping around in the water. And this is...
The eggs hadn't dried out or anything. You hadn't dried out the tank.
I hadn't dried out the tank. And I know that that sometimes happens, that they hatch without drying out the tank. But the water must have been fairly high in mineral content. I should have tested it. But it's... They were hatching just because the adults weren't there, which leads me to believe that a certain proportion of the eggs were probably hatching the whole time and they were just being eaten by the adults. And then when the adults were no longer there, the young started hatching.
So the question is, how did they hatch when the water was full of minerals?
Yes, indeed. That is very funny and strange. The other conditions were right. The temperature was correct. They were getting enough daylight and so on. So, I mean, those are some other factors. But it was just interesting to see that. Very surprising, too. I know that that happens with, you know, if the water were quite soft and so on, that would be one thing. But the water was not very soft, so I just thought that was weird.
It is very odd.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well...
You know what maybe you should do?
What should I do?
If you dry out that tank, try to hatch it from there with just normal water.
Just
like
dechlorinated tap water and see what happens? I could do that with some of them.
Just as an experiment.
Well, I'm going to take out, you know, packets of eggs from it. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I can do some in tap water and some in distilled and see what the hatch rates are with the same quantity of sand. That'd be fun. Interesting stuff. All right. Well, we tried a bit of an experiment recently. We love olive nerites. We've been spreading the joys of olive nerites around.
Spread love.
I brought a couple of olive nerites into some coworkers, and they're enjoying having those in their tanks and so on. It seemed to be doing the job. And we decided to put some in our goldfish tank. We've got a 37-gallon goldfish tank. And we put one in, a large olive nerite that we've had for a long time, so it's quite big. So the goldfish couldn't swallow it. Or try to, or be interested in swallowing it. And it seems to be doing a good job. I think we might keep more in there. We have a little bristlenose placo in there, a small one, that does a decent job, but not quite as thorough as an olive nerite. So maybe in combination they'll do a little better. It seems to be doing better, keeping the anubias more algae-free in the glass
and
so on.
Nice and clean and sparkly.
And I don't mind if we get a few little eggs on the glass and so on. It's not a big deal. I can always scrape them off with the algae scraper. It's not much of an issue. But I have noticed another thing is that we've got olive nerites with our African clawed frog keeping green algae down and doing an admirable job of it. But just lately, I've noticed a little bit of cyanobacteria on the Java fern. It's a frustrating thing to happen.
Are they not eating it?
They're not eating it.
And what would cause it to grow?
Well, basically, you know, cyanobacteria is not really an algae, not really a bacteria. It's like a sort of a, almost somewhere near both. It's a photosynthetic ancient bacteria. And it does grow when it has the right balance of nutrients and it has some light. It usually likes a little light, but it doesn't need much because it's, you know, this kind of bacterial thing. It doesn't need just light to eat. It can get other nutrients. So
do we have something off balance in the tank?
We must. So I'm going to have to figure out what that is. It might be time to change the light bulb. Sometimes that's enough to do it.
Maybe Gwen fed the frog too much.
That could happen because often I find out that she's fed the frog without asking me. And so we'll need to look into that.
She likes to feed the frog.
Yeah. And we do a lot of good water changes in that tank, but unfortunately, cyanobacteria is a little harder to get rid of than some other things because a lot of creatures won't touch it.
Does it just not taste very good?
Apparently not. You know, some people.
What are the ways you get rid of it?
Some people actually treat it with antibiotics because it is a bacteria and it is sensitive to certain antibiotics.
Aren't we going to get like super cyanobacteria then?
Well, possibly. I think I'm just going to look at it by trying to increase the water quality, reduce the nutrient levels in the water, change the lighting, and see if we can.
So keep doing water changes, basically.
I do know in this tank it's been a bit of a balancing act because there's a fairly low number of plants in the tank for the high amount of nutrients produced by the big fat frog. That's a problem.
So maybe we want some more plants.
Maybe, but the problem is with a
African doesn't have great
clawed frog, there's not a whole lot of plants you can put in there safely. I mean, you can put Anubias in, you can put Java fern.
He doesn't eat the plants.
He doesn't, but he would tear up a lot of plants.
Just ripping around with his claws.
Yes, with his activity
being
levels
a
and so on.
Crazy frog.
For a while, he was okay with some hornwort when he was younger, which is kind of a brittle plant, but he was okay when he was younger. But now that he's bigger, I had to take it out because he would just tear
it
apart.
Tears through it.
So we'll have to see what to do. I don't really want to put any floating plants in there because he'd probably eat them. Like
well,
small
and
floating
plus
plants.
He floats up at the top.
Right, so
and
we'll
he
have to figure
find
something
his food.
Out. But it's just, it's interesting. I was thinking this tank is kind of a time bomb in a way because it's got a lot of nutrients and a fair amount of plant load, and yep, that's what happened. We've got the... I think it was fine when the green algae was there because I think the green algae was out-competing, but once I put enough olive neurites in there to eat the green algae, I was increasing the nutrients because the snails are releasing more because they're in there, they're contributing to the bioload, but also the green algae's.
So what would soak up these extra nutrients?
Well, I've thought about putting matrestrial plant roots in there, like pothos, like Robert mentioned he does with his turtles a long time ago. Something like that. The terrestrial plant that absorbed the nutrients but wouldn't compete directly in the water,
and
you know, for CO2.
If you're doing that, is the part of the plant sticking up above the water line?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm looking into doing that. That might be fun.
So I know you've wanted to redo his tank for a while.
Mm-hmm.
In a different style like that, where it's got above water plants,
like a riparian,
it's taller. Yeah.
Yeah, but we would have to get a different tank because that tank is not very tall.
Oh, details.
Yeah. Okay, I almost forgot. We got some things on Facebook that we should have mentioned. Andreka mentioned that Andreka in Oregon mentioned that she had a shrimp that escaped from the tank and was found on the floor crawling some distance from the tank.
Covered in lint.
And they were able to resuscitate it or revive it, or I guess it was still moving at the time.
So they just
put it in the tank, yeah, and it's doing okay now.
That's
so that's
good.
Great, yeah. And I have found crispy shrimp once in a while. It does happen.
Yeah.
Some of them seem to be jumpers or
We've
crawlers.
We've lost a couple other critters every once
over
in
the
a
years.
While.
Yeah.
Our salamander that you had when we were just dating.
Yeah. He made his way out of his tank.
He did. He escaped.
So you do have to be careful with lids and stuff
with
those.
We had a fire belly toad once that we went away for a few days and the cat
somehow got
the
lid off.
Got the lid off and by the time we got back and found
So a couple of things like that happened, but it's nice if you can get them. Sometimes they even look a little crispy, but if you get them into the water, I once revived a goldfish that I had leapt out of the tank and looked kind of crispy. It wasn't all the way crisp yet, but it looked that way from the outside. I was able to revive it, and, you know, things like that will happen.
Which goldfish was that?
That was a long time ago.
Oh, before my time.
Well, no, it wasn't actually. It was one I had at work, but it was a long time ago, so you probably don't remember it. One of the shoebunkins I had at work. But anyway, it does happen. We're glad this one survived. You caught him in time. Also, Nigel had a couple of comments. He said he's working on his yo-yo loaches. His female is growing chubby, but there are no sign of eggs or fry yet. And then he also said that he's got some convict cichlids.
Common convicts,
so they're probably not the pink ones. They're probably the
black and white ones,
or approximately black and white ones. And he says he has them in a 20-gallon tank and trying out find out how to sex them. The difference between male and female. And so I sent him a link on how to do that because we did a podcast on that some time ago.
Oh, what number was that?
That was number 16, episode 16.
Okay.
And we did that. And
do you
basically
want to give us just really quick basics of how to do that? Or is there not a really quick basic?
There is. The females tend to have some orange color right in front of their dorsal fin, like the area under their gill covers in front of their, not dorsal fins, sorry. I don't know why I said that. In front of their pectoral fins. Okay. That area.
Kind of
under and near their pectoral fins and their gills. They have some orange scales, and it depends on the female, and depends on the age and so on, but they're more or less of that there. And the males tend not to have that so much, and they do have longer ends on their dorsal and anal fins, like kind of pointier edges to them. So hopefully that helps. And I think that is just about all of it for this week. Sorry we didn't get to Andreka and Nigel until I just suddenly remembered that we were supposed to do that. But there you go.
Didn't forget.
Right.
Aww.
So
may the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.